Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's Q&A with Layla. This is part two of today's question and answer session. Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. Together we see patients offering a 1-2 punch with nutritional analysis and nutritional counseling on a wide variety of challenging health problems. And we're here to answer your challenging health questions. You can send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. Make your question succinct and of general interest to our audience. And we will select your question, read your question on the air, and do our best to answer it. So what do we have?
Okay, we've got a question from Erwin. Your program is awesome. Thanks a million, Dr. Hoffman. Okay. His question is, how many or how much supplements is too much, and with what possible consequences? Oh, boy.
Wow. You want to tackle that one?
Yeah. Well, it depends. It's going to depend on the supplement. How much is too much? Are we talking in terms of, you know, fistfuls a day, fine. Is anything causing nausea? Are you not eating enough food? But supplementation, how much is too much depends on what your deficiencies are.
Right.
And if you're not deficient in certain things, you don't need as much as possibly what you're taking. No reason to megadose on things unless you're deficient.
Well,
for instance,
go ahead.
For instance, like vitamin D. We like to check vitamin D levels so we can treat you intelligently and tell you how much you should be taking, for one thing. But there are certain micronutrients that we have to be careful with. Too much vitamin A can eventually be toxic to the liver. Too much zinc, without the addition of a little bit of copper, can actually deplete copper. So we have to watch how long and how much zinc are you taking without some additional copper. Niacin, over time, can be hard on the liver. I mean, there are many things.
Right. And it depends on your state. If you have, say, kidney disease or liver disease, if you're very elderly, if you're on certain medications that hamper your metabolism, mm-hmm. Then there are different considerations. That's what our whole practice is about. It's, you know, frankly, there's a lot of information out there, and we would just get nobody coming to see us because now people are very free with information, can look virtually anything up. The people we see are people who have unique health challenges, or they want very, very tailored advice in terms of their particular situation as to which supplements they should take. And our practice is not confined to supplements. You know, we use intravenous, we use chelation, detoxification, and a wide variety of innovative approaches. We even weigh in on the likelihood that conventional surgery or medication is the answer for certain types of problems. So, you know, this is what we're about. Now, another way of answering this question is, I think that there are several levels of supplementation. One level is the amount that's required to avoid malnutrition. I mean, that's classically, and this is something you studied, of course, in your nutrition.
The RDA.
Below the RDA. There are certain diseases that you get when you're truly deficient. You can get rickets from vitamin D deficiency. You can get beriberi from B1 deficiency. You can get pellagra, which is from niacin deficiency, and so on. These are the classic nutritional disease.
Scurvy,
exactly.
Yeah.
So you just need a very tiny amount of these nutrients to avert nutritional catastrophe. That's what sometimes you'll get from a one-a-day multiple. Or even just a rational, balanced diet should stave that off. Then there's a level of what we call sufficiency, which means beyond just staving off full-blown malnutrition. You know, my grandfather, for example, he was 5'2", and he always walked with bow legs. He had rickets. When he was growing up, he had rickets. He grew up in Poland, and there wasn't enough food, and he wasn't taking vitamin D supplements, and he didn't get enough sunlight, so he had vitamin D deficiency. So that, you know, that's an example. So the other level is sufficiency, which is the RDA. That's the next level. The RDA is more like, okay, we're going to go beyond staving off disease. We want to establish what is the minimum requirements to be healthy, not just staving off a catastrophic disease. But that's a very low level.
Yeah.
Then there is not just sufficiency, but optimization. And optimization may vary. It may require a test to check a level of vitamin D to see. So, for example, we have some people and they don't take anything. They just spend some time in the sun. Their vitamin D is fine. Great. Good luck to them. And then there are people...
Until they're 65 or older, they're not going to make as much vitamin D through the skin anymore.
Exactly.
So that's when...
But I'm saying maybe certain healthy individuals who have a good metabolism and mm-hmm. are genetically competent in terms of their vitamin D receptors and so on. Good absorption. But then there are patients who require 50,000 international units of vitamin D twice weekly. Or they may, one patient today, actually the other day I saw, and he's a young man, 33, he's not elderly. He requires 5 alternating with 10 every day. Mm. And his level of vitamin D, we finally got it up to normal, 60, you know.
Wow.
And he just requires much higher levels. So that's for optimization. Then another level is what's called targeted therapeutic use of certain supplements. So, for example, we might give really high doses of fish oil to someone with bipolar disease. We know it's therapeutic in high doses, more than just basic needs. We might use very high doses of vitamin D in someone with cancer or rheumatoid arthritis because we know it's therapeutic, that it actually works therapeutically. We might use melatonin at 20 milligrams daily, a very high dose. That's more than you need to get to sleep, but it has a potent anti-cancer effect at a high dose. Strontium is another example. There's just a little bit of strontium in food. So some people say, well, we're going to get strontium from food. And I go, well, you know, certain fruits and vegetables have a tiny amount, but you get, you know, maybe 500 times as much from a strontium tablet that we use to strengthen your bone. It's a natural substance, but we use it at levels that are therapeutic, almost in a drug-like fashion to achieve a goal, which is to support stronger bones. So, you know, so the, in effect, he's answering a question that's impossible to answer generally, I think.
I
admit to the possibility some people are taking too many things, but if you look at, you know, what I take, for example, and probably what you take, I have an article that you can get at drhoffman.com, the supplements I take. I mean, I take literally a big old handful twice daily of supplements.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've come to any great harm over the 30 years I've been doing that.
I do, and I think I've been well as a result.
Yeah.
For my years, honestly.
I mean, I like to, you know, I don't like to just talk the talk. I like to walk the walk. I try to embody some of these principles, and, you know, my body is kind of a science fair project where I'm, you know, using applied nutrition to optimize my health, and so far, none of that's really backfired, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Hopefully we've answered that question for Irwin. All right.
Yeah, it's a good question, but, you know.
Yeah. But it does need to be more personalized, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, you come in for a workup, we find out what your deficiencies are. That's the practice of intelligent nutrition.
Yep.
And intelligent medicine. That's what we do.
Yep.
Okay. This comes to us from John. Dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, at a recent skin screening at my dermatologist, I asked about my toenails. He said there didn't appear to be a fungus, but yellowing. Any suggestions for thick yellowing nails? Isn't that a fungus, though? Yellowing, thickening toenails?
I think there are a couple of sometimes other reasons for that. It could sometimes very hard to detect a fungus without a biopsy.
Mm.
But it sometimes may be, you know, it's sometimes a symptom of a skin disorder like psoriasis. People who have funky-looking nails with psoriasis, it's the nail manifestation of the same kind of problem that where the skin has disordered growth, where there's like flaking and buildup and scaling of the skin. Similarly, there is malformation of the nails. Now, sometimes the nails can be damaged by drugs. Sometimes the nails can be damaged by trauma. A nail problem will reflect a deficiency. Biotin is an important nutrient for nails, for example, and biotin can strengthen nails. But actually, a nail problem could reflect any type of nutritional deficiency since it's living tissue, and many, many nutrients are involved in the proper growth and regulation of nail appearance and strength. So, it's hard to pinpoint that. Women traditionally have taken Knox gelatin. Well, Knox gelatin, as unappetizing as it may seem, is made from parts of animals that are discarded, the hooves, you know, and they're just melted down into gelatin, and that contains a few amino acids that are important in the proteins that form nails. So sometimes that helps. Women swear by Knox gelatin. It's cheap. It's, you know, available over the counter. Mm-hmm. Other nutrients play a role. Biotin is one of them.
I would also suggest, rather than just the dermatologist, go see a podiatrist and see what they say about it. Mm-hmm. As well. You know, sometimes yellowing nail is just fungus. Oh, well, what would we do for fungus anyway? Olive leaf is helpful.
It's tough. We need a diet change. I think people notice sometimes that when they change their diets and get off of sugar and refined carbohydrates, their nails improve. The other thing that, certainly some of the supplements help. Biotin's a nail strengthener. Actually, the guy who discovered this principle, his name was Hoffman. not yours truly, but no relation, but he's a guy who found that that's the case. Now, there are other patients who tell me that when they take biotin, that it damages their nails. That's interesting, huh? It's people.
I've never heard that.
Different strokes for different folks. People react differently. Yeah.
Wow. That's paradoxical, would you say?
Hey, everything is paradoxical. Haven't you learned that yet in nutrition? Like, there are some people who get great, beautiful skin from omega-3 fatty acids. Other people break out. You know, it's
like me. Yeah.
Inexplicable. I mean, you know, that's the curse of being a nutritionist. The things that you learned in school may not work for you, you know?
Right.
It's like
exactly.
your karma.
Yes.
So,
unfortunately.
Yeah. So okay. Those are some of the things that, you know, some of the considerations.
Okay. We have a question from Joan. Actually, we have two questions from Joan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell them. Let me just tell you the questions. The first is she's concerned about titanium dioxide. She's seeing more of this in more personal care products, in lipstick. It's in toothpaste. She's finding especially those tartar prevention toothpaste, titanium dioxide. She's wondering, could it be harmful? And we know that it's a low microparticle. But her second question, completely unrelated, is what do you think about taking astragalus root for Raynaud's?
Okay, well, let's tackle the microparticle issue.
Yeah.
Is there, titanium dioxide, it's actually an ingredient that is in white paint, and it's also in makeup because it gives your skin a sort of a sheen, like a shiny appearance, a luster. Mm-hmm. However, if you look at titanium dioxide under a microscope, it looks for all the world like little tiny microscopic daggers. And it's a mineral, so it's not broken down in digestion. So it can enter your digestive tract, and it can get in there and create inflammation. And even, I mean, the concern is that chronic irritation might even be a precursor to cancer. I have some concerns about that. But definitely these are verboten for our patients who have ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease because they already have injured intestinal walls. And maybe some people can get away with some of these particles, but we absolutely screen the diets of people who have these conditions, and we tell them to get away from titanium dioxide. Unfortunately, it's also now in sunscreen.
Yeah.
And it, there's a difference between microparticles and nanoparticles. Nanoparticles are thought to be even more harmful. The concern is when you spray this stuff on, it may aerosolize, it may get in your lungs, and that's not a happy situation.
Yeah. You know, one thing I noticed last summer on the beach, you know, there was the neighbors there were spraying the kids, and we're downwind of that, and we're inhaling the stuff, and I'm going, oh, no.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, yeah.
So there actually have been some efforts to ban these types of aerosolized. Applied to the skin, studies suggest that even the nanoparticles do not penetrate the skin, which is reassuring, but they should not be sprayed. And actually, I have to say that compared to some of the harmful chemicals they use in sunscreens, I actually like old-fashioned zinc oxide, which is what the lifeguards used to put on their noses, you know, when we were kids.
Yep.
And it's just basically a reflector. It's a mineral, and it's the particles are large enough so that they don't penetrate the skin. And it doesn't look great, but that's a great skin protector. And you have to slather it on frequently to complete your protection. Not attractive, but it's, you know, good old-fashioned way to prevent sunburn.
Yeah. Okay, now, what do you think about astragalus root for Raynaud's?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be quite, you know, honest. I think astragalus is an immune enhancer. I don't know of it as a circulatory enhancer. I actually developed a product for the vitamin shop, which was advanced immune support that contained HCC, advanced hexose correlated compound, plus astragalus in combination. So it was a good, potent immune support, protecting you against viruses, maybe even with some anti-cancer potential. And I don't know of astragalus as a treatment for Raynaud's. For Raynaud's, you know, which is a painful condition sometimes associated with discoloration when your hands get exposed to cold.
But it is autoimmune, right?
It's autoimmune. I think fish oil is helpful for promoting circulation. And working on the underlying autoimmune condition, there's some studies that suggest that nitric oxide is beneficial. You can use arginine to promote circulation. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of the Viagra principle, where it dilates the blood vessels, you know, hopefully in your hands, not another part of your anatomy.
Yeah.
You know, those are some of the things that could help.
Okay. Thank you, Joan, for your questions. All right.
I think we have time for one more.
We have time for one more. Okay. Hi, Layla, Dr. Hoffman. Hope you're both doing well. Can you please tell me the best ways to clean fruits and vegetables for someone on a budget? This is from Joseph.
Okay.
Well, listen, the best thing that you can do, actually, is to use water. Filtered water would be best because you don't want to use chlorine and fluoride to clean your vegetables. So you have to reconsider when you're cleaning that you're getting a filtered water source. Some people even say using distilled water. That can remove much of the bacteria, even some of the pesticide residue as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, first you want to get organic. So cleaning thoroughly, and even something like, say, a cantaloupe, which can harbor a lot of bacteria in that web-like
and mold.
Skin.
And mold,
and
too.
And mold.
Yeah.
They get very moldy.
Yep.
You want to be able to scrub that with a vegetable brush before you cut into it so that you don't contaminate the meat of the melon.
So I have another thing. This is actually something which I haven't suggested, but I used to have a handout in the 1980s on this very subject, and it was about the Clorox bath for
food. Yeah.
Okay. So what we used to say is, you know, take just a capful of Clorox, add it to water, and
to a gallon of water.
Right, and bathe your fruits and vegetables in that in the sink, and then be just careful to wash it off because you don't really want, you know, the chlorine residue, because that's not great. That's like drinking pool water, and it's a bleach. But it's you know, when highly diluted with water, now Clorox is actually a very potent destroyer of bacteria. So if there's an issue with bacterial contamination on the surface of something, Clorox should neutralize that. Even diluted Clorox. I wouldn't ever use full strength Clorox. That was something that we
it's
used
no
to
longer
suggest.
In vogue, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think we should resurrect that?
No, not for food, but for cleaning of surfaces.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Sure.
Why are you concerned that the food might absorb some of that and
that
it might stick
that
around?
People aren't going to rinse well enough, and that it's just not recommended anymore. And it's not so green to use something so harsh, even though it's just a little bit of it.
Yeah.
So that could be the other
thing. Well, you know, there's other. Here's another one that you might want to use if you want to clean, and I'm just going to suggest it's grapeseed extract. Grapefruit seed extract is, and you can obtain that at health food stores. If you really want to have a sort of a natural cleaning solution, you could try that. It's a pretty good natural disinfectant, and it's not harmful taken internally. In fact, it's in some supplements that are designed to treat candida. And that's something you could use, and maybe there's probably some liquid versions of that if you want to clean off your food. But you know, it's important
the
also.
Go ahead. Yeah, the latest thing I heard actually was using one part white vinegar to one part water, but you want to make sure to rinse it again well, so it might impart a vinegar flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that.
Apropos of that, you know, just we're talking about sterility. I'm watching a series that is on TV called The Nick. and it's spelled K-N-I-C-K, but it's kind of a play on words because it's about surgeons, hence the Nick, in the year 1900 here in New York City. And it is by Steven Soderbergh, who's done some amazing movies. He's a, you know, movie and TV director. And he, it's just incredible to see their approach to medicine in those days, because they just didn't know from sterility, or they were just beginning to learn about sterility. So there's a, there's kind of a funny riff in the in that the surgeons do is after surgery they scrub very carefully because they're covered with blood, and they very carefully wash. They're in the scrub room after surgery, but before the surgery, they just walk in, you know, they just put a smock over their suits, their morning coats, and they reach in there with bare hands.
Oh, my gosh.
And
this,
so
was,
they,
this was before Dr. Semmelweis, right?
Was well, it? Actually, it was at, it, some, Dr. Semmelweis, unfortunately, he came up with this many years before, but he was ignored and scorned and ridiculed. In fact, he died in obscurity in an insane asylum because he was so dismayed that his colleagues rejected him and mocked him for his idea that you should wash your hands before examining patients. They thought it was very un-macho to do something like that. Mm. Anyway, so that's it's on one of the premium cable channels, and it'll probably be available eventually for Netflix. If you want to get a view of what medicine was like in the year 1900, it was gory. They really had virtually no idea what to do with certain medical emergencies, and they just did a lot of seat of the pants procedures, and that's how they learned. And but you know, stuff that would be totally unacceptable now, that's what they're doing. And maybe, you know, 100 years hence, you know, in the year 2114, we'll be, you know, there may be a TV series about the horrors of medicine in 2014, and you know, crazy things that we used to do to patients, you know, cut off their breasts and
crazy things like burn and poison for cancer.
Right, cut off their breasts, poison people's bodies, you know, to get rid of cancer, and you know, cut out their prostates and, you know, whatever. You know, that's it makes you humble because you get a perspective that you know, we're always whenever we live, you know, whatever era it is, I don't care whether it's, you know, the year zero or 1500 BC or 2014 or, you know, 1776, we have what's called presentism. And we look back on our forebears and we think how ignorant they were and how superior we are. And, you know, when you study history, you get a little perspective. You become more humble about some of the things that we do. And, you know.
Yeah.
Things change and knowledge accumulates, and we discard some of the bad practices of the past and supplant them with more enlightened approaches. And that's hopefully what
we're doing
in medicine. Hopefully we're pioneering some of those new approaches. We seem to be on the right track with several of the things that we've been advocating. All right, so that's all the time that we have for today's edition of Q&A with Layla. You'll be back next week with more. So have a great week. And,
you too. Yeah.
Yeah. For our listening, well, I'll see you tomorrow in the office. But for our listening audience, please check out drhoffman.com, because lots of the stuff we talk about, we summarize in articles. Please sign up for our newsletter, which you'll get via email every week. And if you don't like it, you can cancel. And what's really interesting is that we get so few cancellations, and we have a very high what's called click through rate, which means that people not don't just get in their inbox, they actually click it open and read it, and then sometimes click on links there to learn more. So we have a very dedicated audience. I'm very proud of that, and our newsletter population is just going through the roof. We're getting
it really is.
Scores and scores.
People are forwarding it to their friends, and they're signing up, and it's wonderful to see that.
Yeah, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, because I'm constantly sharing articles, and you can like me on Facebook, you can follow me on Twitter. And there are a lot of ways that you can gain more knowledge in this field. And please listen to our podcasts that we posted to drhoffman.com. Also, my weekly radio program on WR. Some of you who are New York City listeners, you may not be used to our new time. We used to be on from noon to 2. Now we're on from 1 to 2. But it's a two-hour program, and you can listen live, or you can, on Monday, catch up with a podcast and hear the hour that you missed. So that's it for this week's announcements. Thanks for joining us, Layla. We'll talk to you
again next week.
Thank
you, Dr. Hoffman.
All right. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.